Welcome to A Little Too Quiet, the Ferndale Library podcast, brought to you by the friends of the Ferndale Library. This is the finale of season one, so if this is the first time you're hearing this, you should go back to episode one, start at the beginning. Now, but we have had a great time creating this podcast for you. Thanks to the friends of the Ferndale Library, today we're talking about some of our personal favorite memories, spectacular and unexpected and inspiring events that have taken place here in this library that we've been lucky enough to be a part of. And it's possible you were even part of them yourself if you're listening to this. So we're going over the last 10 years here. I'm Jeff Milo. Kelly Bennett's here.
Hi.
Hey. And we're going to ruminate on the unique ways in which libraries can bring enriching experiences to the communities they serve. Just by way of example, we're going to go over some of the things that have happened here. I've been here for 10 years. Kelly's been here for longer than 10 years, and it's been a decade. How are you, Kelly? What do you think? Where did your mind go to first?
I do a lot with music here. So one of the things that is cool for me, because in a lot of ways I'm an administrator at this point. Mm-hmm. I manage people. I manage stuff, you know. And I do still work on the circulation desk, so I have interactions out there. But those tend to be short. As the manager of the circulation department, I am mm-hmm. also the person that negotiates like fines and missing books and stuff with people. So my interactions aren't always, I wouldn't say they're not positive, but they're a little more stressful and serious.
Right.
So being able to bring music into this place is uplifting to me.
Yeah.
Like one of the things that stuck out the most, we had an Irish band called Shocked here. And the music, you know, Irish music is kind of moving.
Energetic.
Anyway.
Indeed.
And, you know, there was very joyous songs. There mm-hmm. were some melancholy songs. And, you know, you do these things with me, so you understand there's booking the band. There's schedule stuff. There's mm-hmm. setting up equipment. There's taking photos. There's video. All this kind of technical
stuff. The band has to arrive on time.
Right. And, you know, we got to make sure they sound good. And
load them in. Check the sound.
Happy with what they, you know, are doing. And then usually about 10 minutes into the show, mm-hmm. this moment happens for me. And I kind of look out over the audience and I just like absorb their faces.
Yeah.
And for Shocked, there were people like dancing in their chairs, uh-huh. singing along, dancing outside of their chairs.
Right.
And that one in particular, I welled up. I was mm-hmm. basically crying.
Yeah. And it's a real thing.
And it seems self-centered, but I'll explain myself. I looked around, I went like, I made this happen. That person over there who's like enjoying this music so much that they're like clapping and they have this big like unconscious smile on their face. And it is just a way to connect with people. And music does that, you know, in a way that a lot of other things can't. It
right.
just moves you emotionally. And, you know, because I also found the music very moving, it just got me. And it's happened a few times.
But yeah. There's something to be said for accessibility, too, because that was probably, what, at maybe 6:30 in the evening?
Yeah, so that's Tuesday was one of our summer ones.
Right. That's a time of day where people who aren't going out to see live music in a scenario at 9 p.m. or 10 p.m. at a bar, mm-hmm. they're available, and the whole community can come out for all that, all ages.
Right, yeah. There was, you know, definitely older folks,
yeah.
kids, you know, parents who maybe love music but can't. You know, get a babysitter, they
right.
bring their child with them. And it was just a really moving experience. And it's weird because I don't expect it to happen to mm-hmm. me, but it happens more often.
Yeah.
And I'm the kind of person that is very like interior. I'm focused on the task.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeff and I have worked together for years, so he knows, you know, there's checklists.
Sure.
You know, double checking with people. There's running around, like grabbing this, grabbing that, you know, asking people questions.
Fastidious.
Paying for parking, you know, all of this stuff.
And boxes are all checked.
Have that moment in the middle, along with everybody else in the room.
Yeah.
That is, it's something that I treasure. And it's, you know, there's a lot of people in my position that probably would have given up like event planning and stuff at this point. Cause it is, doesn't really fit with the rest of the stuff that I do.
Right.
But it is an uplift to me that
yeah.
I, you know, it's worth the struggle to get there for sure.
I think absolutely that people who are coordinating programs in libraries, whether they're librarians or whether like you and I, they are not and they're just on staff, have been over the last decade and a half, sort of chasing that high that they can attain when they have a program that just creates a little bit of magic in the room. I know that librarians already do good work, but there is a bit of this thrill when they get to do a good program and they see the entire community show up. And it's like a unique experience. It's a unique location. And they might, I don't know, I think that you take that for granted. Someone who's running a bar or a club books entertainment regularly. Someone who's running a gallery books exhibitions regularly. There's a variety of things that come through hit this building at any point, and we draw a diverse audience to each individual event.
Do you have a particular musical event that sticks out? I mean, we've had a number, but I'm sure
I have three, and I'll go through them quickly in chronological order. So there was, is still a weekly magazine that coordinated a citywide music festival that would be the Metro Times, and they had the Blowout. And the Blowout was hosted at Hamtramck primarily. It was 3 days of nonstop music. It was 2013, they expanded into Ferndale, and we got to be a venue for it. So just being a venue, part of a music festival with, across 3 days, we had 12 bands, and to, I guess, make us as equally enticing as any of the bars that were neighboring us, we got to serve beer from kegs inside of our room, in the library. But there was a moment in the middle of it all on a Saturday, I think, and it was about 10:30, and I took a minute and I walked around all the other bars just to see what was going on, and we had the best lineup that night. And then, lo and behold, this thing called the Detroit Party Marching Band started storming into our building. So it was just stimulus overload in the library.
I remember that one. I had somehow convinced my brother, who's 11 years older than me, to come to that Blowout.
Oh, great.
Which is something he would have never done in Hamtramck. Yeah. I mean, parking alone would have driven him off the edge. But he got to experience that, and he's, I mean, you think I'm an anxious person.
Yeah.
Like, he's the older brother of anxiety. But in that moment, like, his face lit up. Like, he still talks to me about that night.
Yeah.
To this day.
If you can picture it, folks, first of all, we're in a library at 10:30 at night. It's dark. There are kegs, there are amplifiers, there are bands, there's 80 people in there already, and then a 20-piece marching band comes through.
And plays, like, as loud as they can. It's amazing. Unreal.
It was amazing. And then, you know, you talked about the summer concert series, and then 3 or so years ago, I started helping out with that. We booked this singer-songwriter, his name's Dan John Miller. You might have seen him in a feature film called Walk the Line with Joaquin Phoenix. He's also an actor. He's also an audiobook reader. He's quite a character. And he's very popular. He led this band in the late 90s and early 2000s called Blanche, which was an Americana, Gothic Americana thing. And he did a show. He hadn't done a show in a while. And I guess more than 100 people were in there because they were pouring down the hallway, pouring through the vestibule. It was just barely safe sardine fest.
Agreed.
It was great. Yeah. And what was really special about that was a week before the show, he needed a viola player, and he invited someone from our staff to join him for that performance, and they kind of formed a band that night.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah.
So great.
500 people interested in it on Facebook, which, you know, can translate into like 5 people or, I don't know, 200,
exactly.
Which is probably about how many people passed through.
Yeah.
People were watching through the windows. It was amazing.
People were mobbing around the library. But I have one good memory, but I'd like to get more to your memories, though, too.
This one is another one that's very touching to me. I'm sure most people don't think of me as an emotional person, but...
But the library programs can make us emotional.
Does it? Yes.
I just did jazz hands, if you can't see me.
Well, we had... Every time we do a summer concert series, I like to have what I call one weird one, because I really like to push it.
Right.
We had a taiko drum thing in here that was so loud you could hear it across the parking lot, and it made me very joyous. But I had one that was centered around dancing, and so the room was, there was no chairs, or if there were, we pushed them out of the way at the end when everyone was invited to dance to this, I believe it was like an old French song. And
oh,
so
really?
We joined hands and, you know, we did like kind of circular dancing. Well, there is a patron whose name I will not mention, mm-hmm. but she became known to us on staff over the years as very curmudgeonly. Mm-hmm. She, just her manner.
Yeah. Not sunny all the time. Let's say that.
And she was there, first of all, which shocked the you-know-what out of me.
Right.
I was like, wow, okay. And then when it came time to dance, she danced harder than anybody.
Yes.
She was spinning in circles.
She caught the spirit.
And we're talking about a 70-something woman. And seeing that, and I was like recording video and stuff, and like, again, like the tears came because that was a transformative moment for her. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe she was getting in touch with something that mm-hmm. she had felt as a young person.
Yeah.
And, you know, in this safe space where she clearly enjoys coming to the library because she's always here. But it transformed me, too, because seeing her made me feel I saw her more as a whole person.
Yeah.
And she couldn't stop raving about the show. Man. That whole summer she was asking when the next one was mm-hmm. and what it was going to be. And she just, you know, it lit her up.
Yeah.
And that you can't ask for more than that at a library program.
Yeah,
to
I love
see
that.
Somebody like, and you think, it's music. Like,
right.
No, it's music in a space where somebody feels comfortable. That woman wouldn't have gone to the Loving Touch, you know, she wouldn't have felt welcome there.
Right.
But she felt welcome here because even though she's always had a certain attitude with us, I think she felt accepted by us.
Right.
Which, you know, like, don't take that with a grain of salt. Like, they see value in you and you should see value in them if you can. And seeing her that way was like, whoa. So every time I see her after that, even though she's sort of reverted back to, I think, saw you dancing.
Yeah, we just got to bring that right style of dance music back for her. You know, and just to go even beyond that, we're talking a lot about music and sort of live entertainment, but there's also just the all of the craft programs we do here, not just for kids, but for adults. And, you know, I was remembering about how we had a local patron who collected antique transistor radios and he brought in a big collection and was just playing old time radio from the 1940s. Big crowd for that. Yeah. And, you know, just thinking about all of the eclectic synthesizer collectors we've had coming in and showing off the analog synthesizers and seeing 10-year-olds sort of eyes light up in front of it. Experiences that you can't really get anywhere else. You're not going to get that at a bar or a movie theater or wherever. You can't come and find old transistor radios or synthesizer expos or craft cocktail workshops or whatever. And it's just the variety. That's my favorite thing, the variety.
I have one that if you're a library person, you probably still have PTSD about is the eclipse of 2017.
The eclipse of 2017. Let's give folks context. Libraries were given...
If you signed up.
If you signed up, libraries were given, what do we call them? Sunglasses?
Eclipse glasses.
Eclipse glasses, like 4 months in advance?
Well...
How far in advance?
There's this company, group, organization, whatever you want to call it, called StarNet.
Okay.
And somehow I came across them somewhere. Uh-huh. And they're affiliated with NASA, and they do a lot of like STEM and STEAM programming for kids. And I saw that you could apply to get 1,000 pairs of free eclipse glasses.
Fantastic.
So I was like, all right, let's get those. Mm-hmm. And so myself, Darlene, and our former head of youth, Ashley, were like, let's do a party. The really funny thing is that it was not going to be in totality in Michigan. So we didn't...
I didn't even know that.
No, it was partial. Now, it was 80% or something, which is still really cool. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
It was a cool experience. But if you were live in the late 90s, like 97, we had a total eclipse. Of course, the internet didn't really exist, so no one went nuts anyway. So I signed up for these glasses. They came... And they came in like April.
They came in April. The eclipse was in August.
Mm-hmm. Like late August, too.
Late August.
So we reserved like 200 pairs for the event. Thank God.
Right.
And we just kind of put them out in a box at the front desk.
Collect them. Hold on to them. Come back and see us in August.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, we put the remainder of them out and asked people to, you know, limit themselves to four.
Right.
And like it gets closer and closer. And they're just gone. Like people are like, going nuts.
Right.
And it turns out Amazon had some bogus sellers that were selling ones that weren't real.
Oh.
So there was a lot of people, my brother included, who had purchased some mm-hmm. that couldn't be guaranteed not to like fry your eyes. So that helped make the insanity. And okay. then if you remember, mm-hmm. we wrote a press release about it, which you sent out.
We wrote a press release stating as best we could the facts of the situation.
Well, we wrote it early.
We did.
And
we
said we had like 700 pairs.
Right.
Which we did at the time of the press release.
We did.
They, you know, made a story out of it.
Right.
Like a week in advance.
Right. They ran it a week in advance. And this is nothing against journalists at all. It's more of like a social media era news consumption situation where I think, to be fair, I think most people read a headline that said, library has glasses.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was it.
And it just started a storm.
Right.
A storm of, you know, just phone calls and people coming in mm-hmm. and mayhem. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that week, we're like, okay, like, how are we going to distribute these glasses? Mm-hmm. We had to come up with a plan. That morning, one of our staff members was basically accosted by people waiting to get into the library. And this one lady is like waving a newspaper at us.
Golly.
It says you have such and such glasses.
Yeah.
And Carrie like runs in here.
Right.
And I go storming out there because I was like,
wow,
kind of irritated.
Yeah.
So I was like, gathered up the five people out there. I was like, this is how it works. Mm-hmm. This is what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And what we ended up doing is have people line up to get into the courtyard because we had events planned. We had ice cream coming.
Right.
Snacks, water.
Right.
Whatever.
And that was the best spot to look at it anyway.
Yeah.
So.
So people lined up around the library. I've never seen so many people.
Wow.
And I'm stomping around outside, like, with tickets, mm-hmm. handing them out, like, going backwards in line, begging people to share, like, with their group. So, if, you know, it's a mom, a dad, two kids. I was like, can you share
yeah.
one pair, two
yeah.
pairs? And gratefully, there were people, so I could hand out more as we
right.
went. And then we let people in, and, like, a miracle happened. People started just sharing on their own.
People started being, well, they were. They were just
yes.
nice. They
yes.
were. They got it.
Yeah. I had people offering them to me because I had given up my pair and I gave mine to my brother. But people were giving me their pair. And mm-hmm. then they were using some of our other like Eclipse viewer things and enjoying the ice cream and just.
There were lots of families there that were like, okay, five of us, we'll just trade
yeah.
this one.
Because here's a secret, guys. You're not looking at it for 25 minutes or however long it took to go from zero to 80% and back.
It is up there in the sky for a solid 4 hours.
Yeah, it was a really long time.
You won't miss it.
And it just, it turned into like a really great event.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, you know.
I think it's on us, though. I think that we're just so, we just do not ever want to ever disappoint our community.
Yeah.
So I think that was what actually added to our anxiety, the fact that, you know, there would be a perception that we had a thing that we could only deliver less on. And we're like, oh God, that just made us so feel so bad.
Yeah, I was answering Facebook messages like past midnight about them. And it wasn't anything that we did incorrectly,
right.
except for probably what every library in the area / this part of the
yeah.
world did, which was underestimate people's interest in it at the last minute.
Right. But there was a lot of for whatever word it might be, like, I guess, empathy from the people who are attending to
yes.
like to our experience as I don't even want to say facilitators, because it was so chaotic that we almost had to start counting on attendees and parents to sort of be co-facilitators.
Yes, we really did. And yeah, I got a lot of kindness in
yeah.
that line as I was like running through and, you know, basically begging people like, please, it'll be a much better experience if
yeah.
like more people can get them.
Right.
And I actually got a couple of thank you notes, like handwritten thank you notes.
Yeah.
And so did Jenny, who was fairly new to us. I think she started here in June of 2017.
2 months, yeah.
And that poor thing, mm-hmm. like she immediately realized that we were just going to get nonstop phone calls. So
right.
she changed our voice message like, Ferndale Area District Library, we don't have Eclipse glasses. And the phone calls just dropped off.
That's
like
great.
It was so funny. But it was one of those experiences where, and you know, it was a learning experience.
Yeah.
And not in like a, oh, that's a learning experience. But it made me realize that you can only really do your best.
Right.
You can try to think of all the eventualities, which we really did. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're pretty good at planning stuff, but you couldn't judge interest. It just shot up for some reason. And I don't know why people weren't looking at it sooner, but whatever, you know, that's how it worked. And just kind of trying to think the best of the people involved and, you know, do your best to encourage that kind of behavior.
For sure.
You know, there was some people who were upset, but the overwhelming majority of people realized, like, this is like a cosmic event.
Yeah.
Let's try to share it with everyone, you know? And I would say if you're a program person and you're new to it, just try to remember what you're trying to do, which is connect with people and give them a good experience. And you can't think of everything, you know?
Yeah.
Just sort of go with it. It was one of those things that started out as super stressful and ended up being like, I was elated by the end of it.
See, now that's the kind of a flip, because we were talking about getting like the good feelings and goosebumps of seeing how we pleased our community by giving them a cool event. And then they gave us this good feeling by just being understanding, you know? And I think people are understanding of their library when they show up to a program or event. I think they know that, like you said, we're doing our best.
Yeah.
And we're kind of being very inventive as much as possible. Right. So whether it's something like this is like, this is clearly a cosmic event. We don't have anything to do with it.
Yeah. We just, but if
we're setting up a craft for you and we want to show you how to decorate a t-shirt or, you know,
make a luminary.
Exactly. People show up and they're just ready to get the instructions and they sit down and they get into it. And I just appreciate that people are coming to the library and being ready for anything.
Yeah. You know, and it doesn't always have to be these big events either. You know, we've both worked on the circulation desk for years, mm-hmm. and there's always those little moments where you connect with somebody.
Yeah.
You know, if I see somebody checking out books about serial killers,
mm-hmm.
I kind of give them like the side eye. I'm like, do you want some recommendations?
Kelly's got a thing for true crime. Hasn't come out on this podcast yet.
And I've connected with a number of people who, you know, give me recommendations and I give them recommendations, and that's enriching. And you're creating, you know, maybe it's not a friendship, but you see that person and be like, oh, hey, did you finally read that book? Like, yeah, it was really scary.
There's a rapport. And then every time they come up there, every time they come up to the circulation desk, there's a chance to be chatty, and you want to be chatty with every patron.
Yeah.
So it's always good when it does connect.
Right. I purchase music CDs here, and I'm like a regular item selector. I have review sources. I have, you know, things that I know about the process, but I also have enlisted the help of my CD checker outers.
Ah.
If I'm at the desk and I see them like more than once with like a big stack, I will go, hey, I select the music. If there's ever anything you want, please let me know. And I hand them my card, uh-huh. and I get these emails with like lists of music, and they're super grateful too, because I'm getting them things that they want.
But they're empowered. It's a patron focus group.
And then they see that I've purchased the things and they come back and they thank me.
Yeah.
But really they helped me.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. I just bought the thing that somebody mm-hmm. who's really into music liked, which means a lot of other people are going to like it too.
Right.
So that's my little mini like secret to music success when I'm not I don't have my finger on the pulse as much as I used mm-hmm. to, but I have several fingers out in the world that tell me what they want. And that makes a nice connection.
For sure. And a point I forgot to make was that we're being the place where people can experience these events and concerts and crafts and what have you. But we are also the place where you are not required to pay money to enter. You're not required to buy anything when you're here. So that's what makes us a unique venue. But that's also where it's unique when they do come to the service desk. So we aren't necessarily a barista or a bartender that's in a hurry. So I think people should be encouraged to chat with the folks at their service desks.
Yeah, because there's always like something, you know, even just looking at it from as a functional thing, there's always something that somebody mentions where I'm like, oh, I jot that down. Maybe I'll go look that up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure the same thing happens at the reference desk. You know, people ask a question and then their minds blow up and they're like, oh, well, this resource could help that. And it like helps you to make connections and do your job better. But it also like makes you happy to have a good quality interaction with somebody.
Right.
about, you know, just connecting with somebody.
It's and good. And we're also, we're going to be helping you, but we're, it's not like we want to invade your privacy. So it's not like we're going to look at your checkouts and say, oh, this and this and this. We're not, we don't usually initiate. It's so good when the patron initiates, even if it's as simple as the patron coming back in, handing me a book because they want it checked in, and then telling me, this was so good. And that's a jumping off point. And I can say, oh, I've read this author. This is good. And then we, you know, I mean, I had a patron come up recently and tell me they picked one of my picks on our staff pick shelf. And it was a movie and he didn't really like it very much. And he told me about it and we had a conversation. It was very constructive.
Yeah.
So we love that stuff.
I have another memory if we have time.
Yes, we do have time for at least two more memories.
The John Connolly, like, experience, as I've come to think of it.
Yes, so this Irish author, John Connolly, a writer of thrillers.
Yes.
Also a music DJ, big music fan. So Darlene had turned us all on to this book that he wrote called The Book of Lost Things, and we were all very taken with it.
Yeah, it was a departure for him. For sure. If you've read his other stuff, it's very dark. Not that the Book of Lost Things isn't dark, but it's true crime. It's this gritty detective with, like, issues, you know.
It's in the thriller mystery genre. This, if we're just being a bit reductive, would be more in the Neil Gaiman world, you know.
Definitely fairy tale, but like a Pan's Labyrinth feel
in a
way. And we were doing our big, you know, our Ferndale Reads situation, and Darlene was feeling gutsy and was like, let's see if we can get John Connolly to come out. And he turns out he was touring the U.S. and managed to, like, tack us on to this tour. And he's a big deal. Like, he's an internationally known author. So we had to, like, give out tickets to the event, which is a thing we don't usually do. A lot of our events are like, just show up. It'll be fine. This was like, there are 100 seats. Like, we cannot cram another person in a chair in that room, you know. And there was, like, airfare to worry about for him and where he was going to stay and all this, like, logistics stuff. And he got here, and this man is, like, the most generous, kind, like alive person.
Yeah, very generous, and very engaging.
And he talked.
Down to earth.
And everybody loved it. And, you know, he signed books. He gave away these limited edition postcards.
I remember him genuinely being humbled that we were just, like, re-celebrating this book that was actually older for him as a release at that point. It was just...
And a departure for him. So I think it was, like, a place he didn't get to go very often.
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, always at, like, mystery bookshops talking about his latest murder mystery.
So he got to see the impact.
And I remember, like, I invited, like, folklore professors from the local universities, and they came and they asked questions, and it was such a wonderful experience for the audience. But then on top of that, he was so generous with the staff.
Yes.
We went out for an afterglow.
So the event was at 6, and then we went out around 8:30.
And you could purchase tickets, like, as a fundraiser to come and hang out with John Connolly. You could not buy this man a drink. He wouldn't let you.
He bought me a drink.
I couldn't slide him a beer before he got his own and then also bought me one. It was just very, like, you know, you can make stereotypes about Irish people and hospitality and stuff, but, like, he was living it.
He made sure to get a private moment individually with everybody.
Yeah.
Even if he was sort of holding court over the group.
Yeah.
I remember he took me aside and talked about music. And I talked about the kind of music that I liked. And then he sort of processed that and what I was into and then asked me if I'd ever heard of so-and-so band, which it was a Scottish group from the 80s called the Blue Nile. And he described them to me and I was like, that sounds right up my alley. And so 2 weeks later, he mailed me their album.
I remember the package, like, in his handwriting.
With a postcard that said, "Dear Jeff, as discussed over beer, sincerely, John Connolly."
Yeah. It was one of the, it kind of goes down in the annals of this place as, like, it felt really audacious too, because we're a fairly small library. We serve 20,000 population in this town. And, like, he made it affordable for us. He came and it was like he put on his Sunday best, for lack of a better word, and just
he was in a suit.
Blew everybody out of the water.
Oh,
he had
yeah.
a scarf, if you remember.
Oh, correctly. I remember the scarf.
The jaunty scarf.
Ah, yes.
But you know, a lot of times we serve our patrons.
Yeah.
You know, we're giving of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, he served our patrons. But he was so kind and generous and, I don't know, like, uplifting to the staff, too. Everybody was just over the moon about it.
Yeah.
You know, from circulation people to, you know, program planning to pages to whoever he interacted with. Everybody just felt... Yeah. This is going to sound super like overwrought, but like blessed.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, when you work really, really hard at a job and you serve people, it can feel like, oh, well, I just give.
Right.
And he like gave to us in a way that made us all feel like superstars.
It
was amazing.
Oh, yeah. I do have one more memory for myself, too. And it was from 2017. And I had just taken over responsibilities curating for the Art and Exhibition Committee. And there was I would say he's definitely an artist in the realm of photography by now, but he is a longtime friend of mine. His name is Brian Rosman, but also a longtime member of the music scene. He was in a band and still is for a long time. And he's been making it a work of art out of capturing live concerts. So he brought almost 40 pieces into the library on beautiful canvas of his photographs.
And they are amazing.
They're amazing. And I said, well, great, we should have a reception. Do you want a band to play? And by that, I usually mean that we don't necessarily want the musician who's providing ambiance to really outshine the show itself. It's usually maybe one person with a guitar, or it's like some quiet ambient synthesizer music. But he invited a band that's been discussed on this podcast called The High Strung, which features Josh Malerman. So Brian's work alone would have brought in 50 people. The High Strung alone would bring in about 100 people. So we're talking about a little summer evening, a little party at the library, a little art reception, and there's 100 people there. And what was just really touching about it is that obviously the High Strung put on a great show and the room was packed, but so much of the music scene, the members of the music scene who are all captured in the images on the walls were there in person. And it was thrilling. I got that high that we've been talking about. And
where you just look around. Yeah. And I mean, in that case, I can imagine you're like recognizing all these faces.
And I recognize everybody because I've been around the music scene and et cetera. But
seeing them all gathered in a
library
place.
Yeah.
And you did it.
And I did
it.
You
made it happen. You connected those things.
Getting people to where they just cross paths again and come out and be together. I mean, a smaller version of that is I've heard another artist at another reception say to me, oh, people came to see this art reception that I haven't seen in years. Oh, it happened here.
Yeah.
At the library.
You got to reconnect.
Yes.
You probably went out for drinks after. It was amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's great stuff.
I mean, there's so much.
It's been a wild ride.
It has.
And it will continue to be a wild ride. I know there's something else, though. There's got to be. Oh, yeah, I forgot all about this benefit concert. Three benefit concerts that I did. So it was harder times for the library. We were actually going through some cuts, and we actually had to cut hours. And we were only open 5 days out of the week. Is that right?
Yeah, I think Monday through Thursday and then Saturday.
And then a little bit on Saturday.
Yeah.
So since we're only about 600 feet away from an active music venue, I asked if we could have a night where I could curate some bands and have all the funds go back to the library. And, you know, it made a dent, but more than anything, it was just great to see every band say yes. Every band say, we'll do this for free. We want to support the library. Mm-hmm. Everyone come out to support. For year three, we had, I think, 7 bands, and it was very thrilling. One of them was one of those moments where you just don't believe that someone like John Connolly or the aforementioned Dan John Miller is going to just take on your cause and be so down to earth and be so generous and be so engaging. That's a singer-songwriter known as Chris Bathgate, who's really big in here in Michigan and broke out and was sort of a darling of the NPR crowd for a while.
Yeah, that was amazing to see him play for us.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, and he also had not played in a while at that point. And so we were like this re-coming out party for him to get back into action for his songwriting. And again, it's just people being collected in a room supporting the library.
And what's cool is that I was reminded of this because I checked in a book and was, you know, flipping through to look for, you know, the condition of the book. And there's a sticker in there saying that the book was made possible, you know, because of the benefit concert.
And yeah, and those stickers are still in some of those books.
Yeah.
Which is really great. Less on the programming side, less on the event side, but, you know, we've been able to be part of adding collections to this library.
Oh, yeah. There's a small grant in this area called the Dance Grant that is given by the Metro Detroit Book and Author Society. And one year I won $2,000 and we started a music education or musical instruction collection. Which,
nevertheless, educating them on how to produce their own music,
mm-hmm.
and so how much
to,
more.
How to like market it. Yeah. I got, you know, books on Pro Tools. I got a few textbooks that I thought would be too expensive for your average musician to afford, so they would be here. And it was kind of a giving back because up until that point, up until fairly recently, we weren't able to pay our First Stop Friday artists. So there was lots of people over the years that played here for free,
mm-hmm.
just because they thought it was a cool thing to do. And so I thought, well, this is one way I can give back. You know, we circulate local music CDs.
Mm-hmm.
Which I, you know, mark separately, but this was like, oh, you know, you can get some information from here that maybe you can't get elsewhere. And now, of course, we have the budget. We actually pay people.
Yeah.
Which it felt so good to actually be able to pay them because mm-hmm. I knew, you know, that's one of those things. If you know enough musicians, it's like, oh, yeah, the exposure is payment enough. Ha
right.
ha. You know, come
right.
on. And I've always thought art is worth it. You got to pay for it, you know.
Right.
Those collections, and Jeff was able to get a grant to continue to grow that collection, and then you got one for
this was just
like artists.
Artists
as well.
All over the place, and especially kind of focusing on marketing more than mm-hmm. anything, or how do they make a career for themselves?
Yeah.
So definitely that. And I think that just to go back on that, I always saw this place as the place that celebrates its local art.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it is visual art or whether it is the musical arts. You know, we talk about it is our library mission. Since you're listening to this podcast, I might as well tell you the library's mission is to strengthen this community by providing access to materials and services that inform, entertain, and empower, and enrich. And the enriching and the entertaining is the artists that are here in this community. I think they are a key role, and that's why we welcome them with open arms into this building as much as we can.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Great memories. Say, great season one, Kelly.
Yeah.
A little too quiet.
Good job, Jeff.
Yeah.
I've just been along for the ride, which has been fun. I mean, I feel like we started out really well.
Mm-hmm.
We've covered a variety of topics having mm-hmm. to do with libraries. And I think it's a thing I've been saying for years, but you can do almost anything if you work for a library.
Right.
A lot of it depends on the place that you're working. But for instance, when Minecraft was huge, there were librarians that were big into Minecraft.
Right.
Guess what? They got to bring that passion to the library and teach kids how to play it. You know, I got to buy music and bring bands in when that was like my uber passion in like 2006, 2007, because I was like, well, this is exciting. It's exciting to other people. How can I bring it to the library?
Right.
You know, this podcast could go on forever because there's a million, like, we have a book or a movie or mm-hmm. whatever on every subject known to man.
Right.
Can, like, every topic is valid, if you ask me.
Every idea should be pitched.
Yes.
Every idea is something to chase. Every idea is something to suggest.
I'm into, like, self-defense and jiu-jitsu. Like, I constantly recommend books and movies to the selectors. And day I would love to get like a program in here for that. But, you know, Jeff is into, I mean, he's a news writer. He's
That's
a journalist.
Right. That's why we have a podcast.
That's
exactly why we have a podcast.
And we had a program about recognizing fake news.
That's right. We had a program on media literacy. And actually, if you're hearing this finale, we're just starting our three-part series on another one, on news literacy. So whatever you're passionate about, whatever matters to you, it's very possible it can be a library program.
Right. And if you are not a library employee, but you have a passion that you would like to see your library engage with, don't be afraid to talk to your library staff about it.
For sure.
You're like, I love flower arranging. Could you bring in a flower arranger, or mm-hmm. have me be a flower arranger in my, you know, in your library?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I guarantee you, it's very likely you will be met with total enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this has been the finale episode of A Little Too Quiet. Thank you so much for listening. This podcast was made a reality thanks to the Friends of the Ferndale Library. The Friends of the Ferndale Library is a community for lovers of books, music, arts, and culture. They organize cultural, artistic, and educational programs and special events here. They help make a lot possible here at this library, as they do any Friends group would for any of their public libraries. We have the Friends of the Ferndale Library. FerndaleFriends.org. If you want to support this podcast, you can go there to join or donate. You've been listening to the finale of Season 1. We'll be having some mini-sodes coming your way over the spring, and Season 2 will pick up in September. Thanks so much for listening. Kelly Bennett has been here producing and talking about memories.
Thank you so much for having me.
This has been a blast. I'm Jeff Milo. You've been listening, of course, to A Little Too Quiet, the Ferndale Library podcast. We started a podcast because we thought it was a little too quiet.